For information, visit simplecast.com. Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, you are listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, 1770 Euclid Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. This episode is part of All Things Local, where we highlight D.C. history, culture, and communities, and Washingtonians who have made an impact on our city. And Baltimoreans as well.
Thank you.
Just for today. I am your host, Ray Barker, an archivist in the Special Collections Department at the MLK Library. Today, our guest, our only guest, is Joshua Gamma. He's speaking today about a current exhibit at an art gallery called Transformer. That's at 1414 P Street Northwest, D.C.
1404.
Whatever. Yeah, 1404 P Street Northwest. Let's rewind and start again. Which opened Friday, May 3rd, which I attended, and closes Saturday, June 8th. So Joshua is the curator of the show, and this is part of his thesis exhibition for his MFA in curatorial practice from Maryland Institute of College of Art, otherwise known as MICA to the Cool People. Joshua used materials from the Punk Archive, which I actually work with quite a bit and supervise the cataloging and processing of. And we're going to talk about sort of how he found those materials, what he used them for under the big umbrella of something called Radio CPR, which was a pirate radio station that broadcast in Mount Pleasant here in D.C. So welcome, Joshua.
Thanks for having me.
Well, great. So we were talking earlier, and I actually don't know, like, you know, how did you even find DCPL Special Collections Punk Archive?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you, excuse me, as you mentioned, I am a grad student. I graduated yesterday from MICA. And it was really early on in my research, actually, one of my professors, Natalie Campbell, took us to... It was like a temporary home of the Punk Archive. I can't remember where it was. It wasn't the Georgetown Library where it is now. I think it was in the it was in a museum. I'm drawing a blank. But it was just kind of like it was semester one of grad school, just talking about research, places you can do research. So she's like, I'm going to take you to the DC Public Library because, as you know, Natalie works with the DC Public Library, and one of the things they had, like, a box from was the Punk Archive. And, of course, I found that very interesting because I have a background as a punk musician and a music fan in general. And up until I moved to Baltimore a few years ago, I lived in Austin, Texas. And there's always been, like, a deep Austin, Texas, D.C. connection when it comes to punk rock specifically. So, yeah, I was just, like, digging through that box and, like, looking at all the amazing flyers and... You know, talking to the librarian who's there, who's Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle Casto.
And just being like, whoa, this is a cool thing. And at the time, it didn't really, like, hit me that it would be important to my personal research. I just knew that it existed. Like, this is a cool thing. And then it was later, over the summer, when I was working, actually, for the DC Public Library, doing the Soul Tent project, that we did a project... Well, we supported the Mount Reno, the 50th anniversary of the Mount Reno Concerts in the Park.
Or the Fort Reno.
Yes. Yes, Fort Reno. Sorry about that. Yeah, the Concerts in the Rock in the Park at Fort Reno. And I met Amanda Huron there. And I had been aware through some of my research about Radio CPR, but... Radio CPR ended in 2017, and I was starting my research in 2017, so I kind of, like, had this idea that it was like, oh, this is a thing that doesn't exist anymore, maybe it's not really applicable to my work, but then, like, meeting Amanda and talking about it and realizing, like, wow, this actually, like, the mission of Radio CPR, which was really about fighting for tenants' rights and... helping out their neighbors who were getting deported because it was a primarily so Radio CPR was in Mount Pleasant and they were formed in the late 90s, and one of the issues that they kind of formed around was these deportations of Latin American residents in the neighborhood. So just thinking about, like, the power of a radio station to also be a social movement, and to have lots of people from diverse backgrounds coming together over these kind of issues, but also over their love of music and like kind of, you know, so they were simultaneously being activists and being artists. And so anyway, it connected back to a lot of my interests, and kind of through her, I found out that the Punk Archive had a collection of their broadcasts. So yeah.
We can dive into that in a second. Thank you. But can you tell us a little more about what Radio CPR is?
Yeah.
I mean, from what you knew from, I guess you had some a basic understanding of it. Then you went through the materials that we're going to get to in a little bit.
Right.
But also one of the things I enjoy about my job is reaching out to people who had like a pivotal role at a certain period of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that time passed, but those people are still around. They're still doing things.
Yeah,
and so I know
still doing lots of interesting stuff.
So part of your sort of exploration of this was to reach out to some of the Radio CPR DJs and hosts and stuff
to
sort of fill in. Can you talk us through reaching out to these strangers
to
tell you more about what they did?
Yeah. Like I was saying, when I very first looked up Radio CPR, I think it was like a web platform that looked like no one was manning it. So my initial impression was like, oh, this is a thing that doesn't really exist anymore. But through talking with Amanda, and then Amanda directed me towards several other DJs that were there all at the same time. And there was one phone call I had with Amanda that was just like really inspiring and really just fun, like her going deep into the history of Radio CPR and you know, talking about how, you know, they were bonding over these social issues, but like one of the big issues was a live music ban, where these more wealthy white residents that were new to Mount Pleasant were telling the primarily Latino community members that they couldn't have live music in their restaurants. And Mount Pleasant at the time was known for these like roving mariachis, and so it was just like this, you know, very devious muting of a culture. And so it just like the more I talked to her, the more I was like, this is a super important organization that there's not a lot of information out, like at least on the internet. When you like Google it, not a lot comes up. And just the more I talked to her, the more I was like, this is cool. I want to know more about this. And then, you know, hearing that they had stuff at the Punk Archive, I was like, okay, I'm going to check this out. I don't really know what I expected. But when I went to the Punk Archive, there was just a box of not very well marked cassette tapes.
No offense to anyone out there.
These
things happen.
Totally. I mean, you know, they were marked in the sense that like some of them had years, and they were kind of like in boxes with like from who gave what, you know?
Right. And I was going to interrupt. We're talking about the cassettes now.
Yeah.
And then there's all this other material where we're just talking about like...
Well, I'm just talking about the cassettes.
30, 50, 30 something.
Oh my God.
I don't even know.
I don't know. There's probably like 90 cassettes or something. Yeah. Because there's a few boxes of them. But yeah, so I think the first day I mostly went through flyers. And that was... I feel like every time I went there, I discovered something new that made me more like, okay, yes, this is very important to my research and to just like... the world needs to know about this organization.
Right. And had your notion of the exhibit taken form yet?
It had. I think because of my work with the DC Public Library, I was already moving in a direction of wanting to do this show in DC. You know, of course I live in Baltimore, and I think early iterations of the show were going to be in Baltimore, and I knew I wanted to do something with radio. But I think doing the work around the Soul Tent at the public library, around like activist groups that made art intrinsic parts of their strategies, was super inspirational. Specifically, folk music in the sense of the Soul Tent,
and specifically in DC.
Yeah, the Poor People's Campaign. Like it just resonated with me. Like that sounded like a community radio station. You know, it wasn't. It was a protest movement where they got, you know, Aretha Franklin and Pete Seeger and Peter Paul and Mary and all these amazing people to play, and, you know, Appalachian string bands and Chicano folk singers and, you know, black gospel singers. And they brought all these people together. But to me, it was like, oh, that sounds like a great radio station, because that's the way my brain thinks. So I think, yeah, connecting that stuff really to DC, and then hearing about Radio CPR, and then through the process also found out about We Act Radio, which is a current community radio station based in Anacostia, and then meeting Kimon. You know, it just kind of like spiraled into this thing where it's like, there's like a history of activist community radio in DC in a way that at least was harder to find in Baltimore. I think there were some small radio stations in Baltimore that did some work like that, but it's a really rich history here. And
so you had that you had that existing context to sort of drop this sort of interest into.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Because that was the landscape. But yeah. Can you tell me
and
more?
And a historical thing to talk to. Because like, right. One of the things that I'm really interested in as well with this project is bringing new artists in to make new work, to make new broadcasts, and kind of riff off of this history. And I'm a big history nerd, so like, being able to be like, hey, look at this radio station that was doing this work, and look at this, you know, which was Radio CPR, and look at this current radio station, We Act Radio, that is doing this work, to kind of have those as these like
that lineage
templates and that yeah. lineage. So it's like I can bring in new artists, some of which are from Baltimore, some are from DC. They're all from either DC or Baltimore. They're all from this region. To be like, hey, this is the influence. Now here's a platform to do something cool was really important to me. And I feel like if I... Yeah, that template was here.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit more about the flavor of the hosts and the programs? I know I thought sure. you had mentioned something about comedy. I know that might be an outlier, but I'd love to know the
yeah.
flavor of
yeah.
the programs and the characteristics or the character of the different DJs, if that's the term they even use for themselves.
Yeah, yeah, for Radio CPR. I mean, it was all over the place. I mean, there's one show called Aftermarket Spaz, where there, I think it was one guy, maybe sometimes it was two guys, but they would just like improvise on air, and they would bring like, when you listen to it, it's like, okay, I hear a Miles Davis record in there that I recognize, but then there's like these weird electronic noises over the top, and they're fading in like spoken word, and at one point it sounds like somebody's just like making noise with a clarinet over the top. It's just like wacky, and it goes on for an hour. So that's an example of a show. They had another show that was kids from the Latin American Youth Center that were just interviewing their friends about like political issues. And I mean, to them, more just like neighborhood issues. Like, what would you like to see in your neighborhood that you know, what would be something we could do that would improve neighborhood safety or something like that? And having these really like raw answers from like 15-year-old kids, you know? There was a show called Late Night Confessions, which was just all about like love gone wrong, and it was a call-in show. You know, then there was like punk rock shows. There was a show that was called Punk Sin Fronteras, which was just like punk from all over the world. There was a show that was Somali immigrants did it, and it was all in their language. It was all music from East Africa. There's Latin American-based shows. You know, a really good, interesting mix of music, talk, but always really grounded in, like, the neighborhood. Whether it was, like, you know, the DJ is a punk musician, so they're playing their friends' punk bands, or, you know, they're from a specific immigrant group, or it's the show is specifically about some kind of neighborhood issue.
Great. And so we're just speaking with Joshua Gamma, who's from Baltimore. We let him into D.C., and he's telling us about an exhibit that's currently open. He's a MICA student, and this is part of his thesis project. Can we talk? I mean, we're pretty much walking through now like a linear. I mean, I love this stuff, you mm-hmm. know, so I worked with you at Peabody Room. So but I, you know, also would picture you there in front of those boxes mm-hmm. going through those cassettes, trying to get a sense of what was there, because we said they weren't really clearly identified.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point you knew you had to build a certain amount of hours of content because
right.
you're later going to broadcast it
right.
at the gallery, right? Mm-hmm. And so can you walk me through just like what were you looking for? I mean, what were you looking
yeah.
to sample, you know,
right.
to share with people?
Because yeah.
that's a big part of your exhibit, I would
yeah,
think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a point where I realized that there's just no way I could go through everything. I just didn't have the time, and there's no way I could digitize everything. So it kind of became about like, what are the pieces that really seem to represent what Radio CPR was all about? You know, at this point I had read a lot of writings by some of the DJs, and, you know, as I'm talking to them, they're like sending me like their manifestos and their flyers and all this stuff. And, you know, one of the DJs actually did her thesis project about Radio CPR. She was an ethnomusicologist. So really, you know, I felt like I was getting a good vibe of what they're all about. So like finding those moments where it's like, oh, these kids talking about neighborhood safety really feels like what this neighborhood's about, or what this, radio station's about, and like bits of music that seem like, Like the aftermarket spaz thing. It was just like, this is so uniquely Radio CPR. I've got to broadcast some of that. They also released an album on Discord Records at some point, which actually did a really good job of taking little chunks of different interviews they did. So some of it comes from that. But then I also, the other night, interviewed, I think, five former DJs from Radio CPR. So just got them to talk about kind of the beginning of the radio station and the mission.
Was this an oral history, or what's the intent of the interview?
Yeah, I guess an oral history is a way to frame it. I mean, I kind of looked at it as like an interview
conversation.
But I'm going to take that and cut it into pieces and mix that in with some of these archival materials from the DC Punk Archive. So yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking at it like if you were to, for lack of a better term, make a greatest hits of these tapes and broadcast it, what would that look like? What would that sound like? What would be a good way to display what this is all about, you know, without like just playing one of these cassette tapes, because I feel like that just gives you a narrow sliver of what it's all about. So they've kind of become sound collages at this point. I've broadcasted a couple of them, and we're going to do, I think, about three more.
Right.
And they're going to all be archived on the website for the exhibition, which is transceiverradio.org. That's transceiver, TRANSCEIVR.
No?
ER.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a transmitter and a receiver put together, radio.org.
And I went there earlier today, and there was the program list is there.
Like yes, the programming schedule is there. And that's subject to change, but it's pretty pretty right on. But at some point, we're going to have a full-blown audio archive of everything.
Nice.
We've broadcasted.
And I'm reading from the press release here. Transformer and guest curator Joshua Gamma invite you to tune in to Transceiver Radio, collaboratively produced experiment in radio as cultural commons, simulcasting new work by over a dozen DC and Baltimore-based artists. Can you talk a little bit more about transitioning now into the actual exhibition and incorporating those archival materials into, I mean, the flyers and other things, and how you see that content sort of falling into the exhibition space?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, on one hand, you have the exhibition space, which is kind of designed to almost be like a lounge. Like, we have couches in there. We put a layer of foam down and then a bunch of rugs and carpets and cushions and kind of like encouraging people to hang out. None of this is material that you could just like quickly absorb. So I really wanted to make it a space where like people felt welcome to just chill. And in that mindset, I was thinking like, well, we should like hang stuff on the walls that is something that you could maybe slowly absorb while you're sitting in there. I mean, it's interesting because there are kind of two ways that people interact with the space. There's the events, you know, we have happy hours and parties and stuff where people just like come in and like party and it's crowded.
I showed up to the opening and I'm like, man, there are too many young people. It's too loud. I'm going home. I'm going to go read a book.
Yeah.
But it was cool. I'm being funny, but it was kind of,
but I mean, it's a small space
and there's a lot of excitement and it's kind of fun.
And it's, you know, it can be loud, you know? So I think in that context, the flyers and things that I put on the walls kind of become almost more of a texture, because I have a bunch of Radio CPR flyers, and then mixed in are flyers that I've designed with some of the artists from the show that are things that are like current programs on the show. So when you look at it really, and a lot of those are like in neon colors, so it kind of becomes like a pattern. So I was trying to think of it as a way like it can read quickly as something visual, but if you're there all day just chilling, like sipping on something, laying on the couch, you could actually start to read these things and realize that there's a lot of content about like, oh, this radio station in Mount Pleasant, like what was this about? You know,
So that was my follow-up question. Yeah. Actually, I love that notion of the different layers, right? Mm-hmm. And that shows there's just the visual aesthetic layer, and you're just, you know, it's like being in a club or something. You're just taking it in, and there's no like really intellectualizing what the content is of that. It's just sort of a visual material.
Totally.
But then the people who hang out, and there's, you know, it's always, I always feel like when I'm doing something like that, I want someone to like nerd out on that history the way I do.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, giving people that option if they come at the right time of day or whatever to like figure out, oh, what is that? Or that was something.
Right. Know? Yeah. I definitely want to encourage people to return. And I think part of it is the fact that There's a lot of information to take in, but also, like, we have events where there's free drinks, and it's cushy, and it's comfortable, and I try to be there as much as possible and, like, talk to people and hang out, and I mean, we just are trying to make it sort of like this warm, welcoming experience. And a lot of the shows, they are every week. So, you know, if you really love a show, you could come in every Saturday or every Thursday and sit in and listen and see your DJ do something live, which is really, I think, is really nice. So that's one layer of the information, these or one way that I use the CPR materials. And the other way is the broadcast and thinking of it as a radio show. Like, they're compilations of archival materials, but they're also a radio show. So they're every Friday at 4, I believe. I bet it's on there. Or
5. I have something every, let's see here.
Yeah. It's on the...
I'm scrolling through here.
I should know my own broadcasting schedule.
Where should I start with this? I have a closing reception in June 8th. I have something for May 11th.
Now we're just...
we're fuddling around here.
I'll pull up the schedule on my
phone. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Thursday is 2 to 2:30. And We Act Radio... Huh. Well, we'll put this together.
Yeah. No, sorry about that. So it's... Every Friday at 3 to 4, we're doing the broadcast of Radio CPR. But it's in a broadcast schedule with all sorts of other stuff, you know, sound artists, you know, conversations, more kind of podcast things, sort of more like this. But then also music shows. Like, we have a Latin American music show. We have a music show that's unique DJs every week. But, yeah.
And I was just going to ask, we didn't really get to touch on the... some of the people you've reached out to, and like, were they sort of like, how did you, some of the radio CPR folks, like, were they, is this like a stranger's contacting them in some instances from out of the blue?
Yeah.
And I mean, sort of like, how did you find me? How was there any of that sort of stuff going on, or?
No, it's interesting. I mean, I think one of the big learning experiences for me in this whole process is like, learning that different people are going to read you differently. And it seems like specifically the community radio people tend to be really like, yes, I want to talk about this. Wow, I can't believe you actually care about what I did 20 years ago, you know? So that was actually really nice. Like, everyone I reached out to was super excited about, like, yeah, let's talk about it. Here's everything in my archive. I'm just going to give it to you. Everyone was really warm, really welcoming, really supportive. I reached out to Amanda initially, and I think...
And can you talk more about her role in this?
Yeah, so she was one of the original founders. She was one of four women that were really instrumental in founding Radio CPR. But I knew she was still in D.C. I had met her really briefly at the Fort Reno thing. I think she knew Natalie Campbell, who's one of my professors. And so I wrote her like a very like well-crafted email that was like, this is my project, and we met briefly, and these are the things I care about. So I think because I came at her with that, she was like, oh, I feel like I kind of get this guy. So she was immediately very receptive, and you know, we had a good conversation. And I think, and she's the person that introduced me to the other DJs. So I think she was sort of the gateway. Like, her saying I was cool allowed everyone else to be like, oh, he must be cool. But yeah, everyone was really great, really helpful, had great stories, sent me tons of flyers, tons of writing.
Great. Yeah. And then the did we walk through the exhibit as enough? Did you feel like we covered that sufficient? I'm curious to know how people have responded.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about one of the threads about being the historical context, and
right.
I imagine that might get buried in the alcohol swilling and loud music stuff. Or like, how do you feel
right.
like that message? How are the message at different threads being received?
Right. Yeah. I think it is being received because we're there so much and we're on a very busy street. So if you come by in the middle of the afternoon on a Wednesday or Thursday, it's a much different vibe than if you come during like a party, like a happy hour on a Thursday night or a Saturday night party or something like that. And the show, the broadcasting schedule is designed to reflect that, you know, earlier in the day shows are quieter, they're more reflective, some of them are more kind of sound art based, but as the day goes on, it's more music and more exciting material. Not that the other stuff isn't exciting, but more, you know, loud loud material, maybe I should put it that way. But yeah, I think the show really, I think the thing that's most important is that it's grounded in the model of community radio, and like the idea that community radio can be a public platform, can be a space for a lot of different people to come together and have their voices amplified in a unique way that can be very communal, but it also can be a place where like people can have different opinions in there, and you've got an hour, you know, you've got 2 hours to like express what you want to say, and these things could live next to each other. And they could be oppositional, but they could also be collaborative. And, you know, I just think it's an interesting model for an art show and for curatorial practice in general, I think is kind of something that I'm getting at and struggling with and trying to figure out.
And I was going to get to that next, actually, yeah. If I could. This isn't just for fun. I mean, this is part of your mm-hmm. thesis. And
this
I was curious
is,
to know
what I'm going to be doing in my life. Yeah,
right. I mean, so can we talk about other? Are you aware of other students who are also doing similar projects for their thesis, or how do you feel like? What does this mean for your thesis work? I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Either of those points.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think. I mean, no one else in my class is doing anything like radio related in that sort of way. But you know, I mean, there's definitely like a movement right now. I mean, there's like kind of like social practice movements in art that are very much about like collaboration and getting lots of people together to do different things. And there's lots of critiques of that. And actually, in a way, I think I'm kind of critiquing that as well, because I'm looking at it like a community radio model that I think in a lot of ways is a little bit more effective in the kind of communal work that a lot of social practice projects are trying to get at. Because radio, community radio stations tend to be like these longer projects that are really a collaborative thing, that evolves and changes. And, you know, when there's conflict, things adjust, and they have more time to really, to be more embedded in the community and more, you know, in solidarity with different neighborhood groups and activist groups and things like that. And I understand that my project is a quick, you know, experiment, but it also, I want to kind of try to ground it in that, and that's why I've tried to work with, you know, people from Radio CPR, people from We Act Radio. I'm, you know, been talking to people from the Poor People's Campaign, you know, trying to connect these to, like, these larger institutions that can do work that are not even larger institutions, but just, like, institutions that have more longevity than perhaps this project. I mean, I'm very interested in perhaps this project living on in some way, but it's, you know, we've got to figure out how to make that happen.
Well, we've got the website.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so the website will live on. But I mean, even as a radio station, like can it live on in that way? The website will exist after this run at Transformer. So we will have an archive. So yes, it will exist as an exhibition in some form on the internet.
And
forever, hopefully.
As long as the internet's around.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask this question because I kind of don't like going into these intellectual rabbit holes or whatever. But so we're currently broadcasting a podcast right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when we say the word podcast, I think people think certain things,
right.
Certain associations.
Mm-hmm.
I won't state those. People have their own version of what
right.
a podcast is.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're moving over to pirate radio, community radio,
mm-hmm.
air quotes around those.
Right.
What does that impart to somebody?
Right.
Those terms.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something I took a while to kind of figure out how to talk about. Cause I think that to me, there's very much a difference between like public radio, community radio, college radio, corporate radio, podcast. They're all very different things to me, but I think I've kind of had to unpack that a little bit for some other people. And so I'm very intentional in using the term community radio, because to me it's very much about a group of people coming together to do something, and coming from different backgrounds and being kind of plugged into some kind of specificity of place. And I think, you know, I love podcasts, but podcasts tend to be kind of these one-off things, like where they're like, and by one-off I mean it's, you know, a couple of people that record it themselves in their garage or whatever, and they might not be part of a larger institution or a larger organization, and, you know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but podcast doesn't necessarily say that they are. Where, like, for a community radio station, you by nature are an organization. You are an institution that is having to deal with people and having to deal with your context in a way that podcasts sometimes deal with and sometimes don't and don't necessarily have to deal with. When I say public radio, I mean publicly funded radio, so like NPR, which is also great, but also is a different thing.
Yeah, what about pirate radio?
And pirate radio. The people at Radio CPR actually were very intentional in not using the term pirate radio. I mean, I support pirate radio.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. So pirate, I mean, it's unlicensed, undocumented radio. It's people just doing it themselves without applying for a license. And the FCC has made it very, very difficult for anyone to start a radio station. It kind of comes in waves. Like, it's a little easier now than it was, say, in the 80s. But it's really hard to just start a radio station unless you have millions of dollars, like you're a corporation, which I think is one of the things that's really awesome about podcasting is you don't have to go through the same kind of FCC loops, you know, hoops to jump through the way that you would if you were going to start a terrestrial radio station. But yeah, I mean, the term pirate just means they're doing it without a license. But I think, and Radio CPR was a pirate radio station. They didn't have a license, but they saw their connection to their neighborhood as more important than their protest against the FCC. I mean, they did think that was important, and they did think it was worth doing it without a license. But they grounded themselves in the neighborhood and their community first.
And do we know if how they started? Can you speculate exactly? Yeah, yeah. Was it a result of a specific event or cause or mission? And were they mostly women? And I was going to ask you to tell me why and how it ended.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was mostly women early on. I mean, it was the four women that started it. I mean, they started Amanda Huron specifically. Or DJ Maud Ontario, as she goes by on her broadcasts. But she said I can use her real name now.
So was there a level of anonymity with some of this?
Really? For sure.
The DJ name was
the DJ. They were very completely anonymous. We could be any. Huh. Yeah, because if they got raided by the FCC, they didn't want any proof.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, Amanda is from Mount Pleasant. So she was very connected to the neighborhood. And, you know, when she was growing up, it was primarily a Latino neighborhood. So seeing these issues of people she knows getting deported during the Clinton years, and then these newer, wealthy white residents telling them that they couldn't play their music, you know, and they couldn't have, you know, mariachi bands and things like that. So a lot of it was like her and her friends seeing this stuff happening to their neighbors. And kind of because they were white, I mean, because Amanda and her friends were white, they could kind of see both sides in a way where they could see like, oh, these rich new white people have this certain idea of what safety is. And you know, to them, it was like they didn't want their property ruined or broken into.
This is the 80s?
This is late 90s. This is like 1998 when they started. But then, you know, like they actually did this oral history thing with these kids where they had these kids interviewing each other about what their ideas of safety were. And they were mostly Latino kids, and they were saying that they didn't want to be harassed by the cops and that the cops would make them pull down their pants and things like that. So they started to see like these neighbors don't know each other's stories. And to them, the radio seemed like a very natural place to like tell these stories, to amplify these underheard stories. And also they, like these women were involved in the punk scene. And, so I think part of it too was like,
Amanda's a musician.
And to like, a place to amplify music that you can't hear anywhere else. So
the whole DIY thing is inherent in this.
Yeah, absolutely. So it kind of became this alliance between like these like punk musicians and people from the neighborhood and also like Latino musicians and like people that were like felt like they were being silenced. Yeah, and I think that's why it's a mixture of like community reporting and community conversations and music.
Yeah. And I was going to say the broadcasting radius or whatever is so small, it is literally broadcasting to that community.
Exactly.
And nowhere else.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Kind of defining it for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they wrapped. Do we know why it ended or how it ended?
I mean, a lot of things changed over time. I mean, one of the things is the live music band, no longer. I think they actually kind of defeated it. I think their purpose for that. I mean, they like live music's back in Mount Pleasant. I think that was part of it, but I also think part of it is just like, you know, times change, people get older. But I think the thing that was really the death knell was the church that so graciously hosted them for almost 20 years folded.
What was that church?
I forget the exact name of the church, but the building was La Casa.
Okay.
And they ran like a space that was just for the community to use as they wanted. And the church was very supportive and very progressive and you know, never charged them rent, never charged them for utilities. You know, there was a point where they were talking about the legality of the radio station and thinking maybe they should shut it down. And the church was actually like, don't shut it down. We want you to be here. So yeah, I mean, I think that was the thing that really finally made it end. But I think a lot of it was just people moving on
And I was just going to thank Joshua for, you know, these people have notions of archives living in shelves in dark spaces behind closed doors, right, until someone opens that up and blows the dust off and starts going through those things. Mm-hmm. And some of that's true. But our efforts, of course, are to get those out into the light and share them as we can in a piecemeal fashion or as an entirety of a collection. Mm-hmm. So we will be working on getting that collection available on a more consistent basis to anyone interested out there at some future point.
How do you approach the punk archive? If someone's listening at home and wants to do something with the punk archive, how do they like make an appointment?
I think there's a contact info online on our website. Thanks for that.
Yeah, do that.
Always looking for volunteers. Yeah. But I just want to wrap things up here, but just to remind everybody, just Joshua Gamma, and we're talking about his exhibition called Transceiver Radio at the Transformer Gallery, and that's open now Wednesdays through Saturdays, 12 to 6, and by appointment. And is there anything else we should tell folks about what's coming before it closes?
Yeah, I would just say go to the website, which, like I said, was transceiverradio.org. That's TRANSCEIVER radio.org. And you can see the programming schedule. If you click on the links that are the programs, there's a little description of it. And you could stream from that website. So you can listen to anything. When it's live, it's live. You can listen to it. And come by and see us at Transformer. It's 1404 P Street. I'm there a lot. Whoever's DJing will be there most of the time. Sometimes they send in pre-recorded mixes and things like that. But it's we're there to answer questions. We're there to hang out, and it's a lot of fun.
And so I have to make a plug. Thank you, Joshua. I have to make a plug. Speaking of Amanda Huron in Mount Pleasant, the library is doing a People's University. It's just a series of lectures. We have one coming up Tuesday.
And June. More.
We have an event coming up Tuesday, June 25th at 6:30 p.m. at Mount Pleasant Library. It's History of Tenant Organizing in Washington, D.C. And so, provoked by mass evictions and the onset of gentrification in the 1970s, tenants in Washington, D.C. began forming cooperative organizations to collectively purchase and manage their apartment buildings. The seminar and discussion on the history of tenant organizing and housing cooperative formation will be led by Amanda Huron. She's a professor at the University of the District of Columbia and an author of Carving Out the Commons, Tenant Organizing and Housing Cooperatives in Washington, D.C. So this is one of many series of programs under the People's University heading. And this is in collaboration with Smithsonian Anacostia Community Museum and a complement to their current exhibit there, A Right to the City. So just keep an eye out for that. That's online on the library's website and register at Washingtoniana.eventbrite.com. So thanks again, Joshua, for coming out. Thanks for your help working on the archives.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Sure. This has been an episode of All Things Local on Full Service Radio. We broadcasted live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Please visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download the show wherever you listen to your podcast by searching for Full Service Radio. This is Ray Barker. Thank you and have a great day.